Welcome to the Strange O'Clock podcast with Michael and Jerry, and we have our renowned world occult crime Christian investigator and attorney and author and podcaster, which is in the top 1% podcasts of the world. So we welcome you back, William Ramsey. This is the second time for me, and this is the, I think, second or third time for Michael. Is that right, Michael?
Mike and I have
Oh,
done a
we've
number of
done a
shows.
number of shows. Yeah.
We've done on
Okay, several then.
Chesterton. We've done, what else have we done? Done a number. We've done at least four or five
I
at this point.
shared my testimony about the family and the
That's
Children of
right, the
God
family. That's right.
cult, and a lot of fun stories and just a lot of crisscrossing throughout the years and sharing your show on the Fringe Radio Network. It's been a great honor to be friends,
Yeah, likewise.
William. So looking forward to this conversation.
Great. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
We're happy that you're on board. Thank you so much for being patient, William. I know that we've on both ends had to reschedule due to various things, but 2 months later, here we are. Thank God. Thank God for you, William, and thank God for you, Michael. And so I'm so glad that you all are on board with this. So I had just been listening and watching William's interesting one of William's interesting and amazing videos on his website, which is
WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com.
WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com. So he's got amazing, interesting, and profound, and some would say disturbing, because anytime you expose the darkness, it's going to be disturbing. So you have to be in the mood for it for sure. So pray before you read it or watch it, because it definitely is something that exposes the darkness from a biblical perspective. So I just got done watching Aleister Crowley. It's not Crowley, folks. Aleister Crowley, Prophet of Evil, and it was really intense. And we could see, like he's like an octopus. He has tentacles reach to every almost every aspect of society. But he's not the progenitor of evil, of course. The enemy, Lucifer, Satan is. But he's like the he's carrying the evil torch for the enemy. So, so William, let me ask this. So out of all of these evil guys, be they Aleister Crowley or Anton LaVey and Michael Aquino or what have you, who do you think would is the most sinister and why?
Well, I think it's Crowley. I think you have to go back because he's influenced all of them and all so many of the people that are walking around today. So, I mean, he meant to kind of compile all occult knowledge and really kind of set the standard and kind of push forward or bring back into the public consciousness all these old ideas that, pertain back to biblical times, the evil ideas. So I think that he's definitely the most, and almost all of these occultists use Crowley as some kind of either basis or stepping stone. So they go through a Crowley phase where they learn about him and then branch off and do their own thing. So I'd have to put Crowley really at the top. And I think he meant to leave a written record. That was his idea. He was really a literator, like a literary figure. And so his ri rituals and what he wrote and the Book of the Law, I think, is why we are, and all these other people have branched out from him. Really is really incredible because I've done fairly decent amount of research into a lot of these guys, whether it's LaVey, Aquino,
Yes.
Myatt, Eccles, Genesis P. Orridge, and they all have a Crowley pedigree of one sort or another. They either knew the Crowleyites, they knew what they were up to, and they defined themselves either as Crowleyites or Thelemites, or said, I'm going to do something different than that. So it is interesting. Like the
William, yeah, get
Crowley's
into
kind of,
detail with
yeah.
the Crowleyites, like
Well, it was
how
like,
his work kind of continued into today.
yeah, well, he died in 1947, but there was somebody he supposedly handed off the reins to. His name was Grady McMurtry, who was supposedly going to be the next kind of Crowley. And there were arguments about him, but he actually ended up in the Bay Area. So he was in Berkeley,
Wow.
kind of practicing the OTO. There was an OTO chapter there. And the guys,
Okay.
LaVey and Aquino, knew of him. And there was like, they were socialized together strangely. And like, there's
Wow.
sequences in my book, Prophet of Evil, where like Grady McMurtry, Robert Anton Wilson, and Jacques Vallée, the UFO guy, are all talking about alien entities together. Yeah. So you can see
Wow.
that culture. I think in the occult, they would call it a current, like a magical current. So you carry it out. And the reason I use the term children of the beast is because a lot of these magician guys, They'll have somebody they want to train or carry on, and they'll call them their magical children. So they're not, obviously, they're not
Wow.
their genetic children, but people who have that kind of occult interest. So I think that, yeah, there's a
Wow.
lot of kind of like the occult. And then Murtry was known. He was like a known entity. People knew him, and he carried on and initiated people who've initiated people who are around in occult, practicing occultists today. There's more than you people might think.
So it's kind of like the evil version of the fringe Christian community stemming from Future Quake that had everybody, Derek Gilbert and Peter Goodgame and you and others, and then Canary Cry, and then all the people they birthed, and then we're here
Right.
now, like interviewing. It's like that same kind of concept of passing on the torch, that information.
I
Do you,
agree. I
one of the
mean, I,
questions,
yeah.
go ahead. Sorry,
Well, I was
I have a
just going to
lot of
say, do you
questions.
see the old, like at the beginning of the, after the Lord passed or was resurrected, how many people it went through from the, the original apostles to Paul, and how many people Paul influenced, and how, and you can read that really in the very beginning of the Christian history. You can see people who were baptized by Peter, who then wrote the earliest histories, earliest. Not the Gospels, but some of the very, like first, I think second century histories, like I said, that they knew Peter. So, I think within Christianity there is that. There are those kind of spiritual children, Christian children who, carry on what some other people have done. I think that's definitely true.
One of the things, William, that I remember from your Occult Hollywood Part Two video was something I did not know about, was that almost every, almost with an asterisk, not every, but almost every major Hollywood movie, that there is a reason for it, and it's usually to give glory to the dark side, that there are euphemisms for ritual sacrifice, ritual, there's also, there seems to be metaphors for God, or is that the right word? I'm sorry. That there seems to be archetypes for God, archetypes for Satan, and usually in these movies, it's a the story is flip-flopped, because most people believe that God is good, unless you're, of, Luciferian or satanic. But most people believe that God is good. Even those who aren't even Christian, they believe that there's a higher power that's benevolent. So, what Luciferianism or Gnosticism attempts to do in especially these movies is they flip-flop, as we all know, they flip-flop the story that they make Satan or Lucifer the good guy, and then God the evil guy. So that seems to be prevalent in a lot of movies. But one of the things that I thought was interesting, in the Fight Club movie, which I haven't seen, but I know generally the story of it, was that the soap represents what?
Sacrifice, human sacrifice. Yeah.
And how did you find that out? How did you
I
find out
read
the
the
whole
book. Yeah.
backstory?
Well, I
Oh,
read the
you've
book. I
read
read the
it.
original
Okay.
book, and Chuck Palahniuk's book is based upon a book of somebody who's really kind of in the what would be described as transgressive literature or kind of counterculture literature. So he's part of this kind of vein, kind of like Burroughs or another guy. Got some people don't know enough about. His name is George Bataille. But Palahniuk is part of that, so this kind of like countercultural idea. So I read the book, and that's how I understood the
Wow.
symbolism that isn't pointed out in the movie. So people can see this; they're being exposed to it, but not consciously. So all of
Right.
the posters and art and the theme in the film is like they're always making the soap, but they don't talk about it as sacrifice. And there's a huge amount. And later on in the film kind of blinks at it, but later on in the actual book, these people who are the narrator, you never really know his name, but he is actually supposed to show proof of human sacrifice to Tyler Durden. He's supposed to show these, what is it? Not identity cards, like driver's licenses, to Tyler Durden as proof of that he's committed these human sacrifices. So their murders are seen in that way, and that's left out in the film. They may have tried to enter it in, but it was probably too scandalous. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Wow.
I do know Fincher is an interesting character. He's probably in the transgressive film category, not literature. But I mean, I haven't read all of Palahniuk stuff, but I've known that he's been involved in some. His writing styles and stuff he knows would indicate to me that He's familiar with like initiation and monastic kind of lives. Like in the book, you can see that the whole fight, the whole like Project Mayhem is some kind of initiatory monastic order, like a like an occult order where you have to, you
Wow.
know, perform duties to kind of, you know, get up. And then if you've watched the film, it accelerates. It's kind of like this theme that is in the far right, where they want to accelerate the downfall of civilization. And that's what Tyler Durden wants. And it's kind of interesting because when I first watched Fight Club, my perception of Tyler Durden was kind of like a charismatic anti-hero. But now I see him as like a chaos magician. Obviously, Tyler Durden is 5 and a 6, right? So you've got the number of 11, which ties back to Crowley, and which Crowley used, which is was his prime number of magic. It's really the number of the new Aeon. And you'll see that reflected in Harry Potter as well. So,
Wow.
yeah, they're smart. Like when you really take apart what is the real stuff, the references in Fight Club, it becomes pretty apparent that Palahniuk knows a lot about the occult or esotericism.
Wow, interesting.
And my understanding is
William.
that he lives on some kind of like compound or something like that too. Like, or who knows what goes on in there? I don't know. And he
Really?
was part of something called, he was part of like a secret group. They called themselves the, I can't remember what it was, but they were involved in kind of culture jamming. So he was involved in like public stunts and stuff like that. It was called something society, like the Comedian Society. I can't remember it offhand. I couldn't find it. But. So you see that kind of stuff reflected
Wow.
in the whole, all the narrative of Fight Club.
Wow.
Right. Because no,
William.
nobody mentions Fight Club. Nobody talks about Fight Club, right?
That's
So
true,
it's like a
right?
secret society. So you know what's going on, but nobody else is supposed to know. And at the end of that film, it's like people are nodding at each other and recognizing each other, but not ever mentioning why they know each other. So it is a secret society.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But never openly
So you have
stated.
that
So,
last
yeah.
scene too, like all the buildings falling, and it came out just a few years before 9/11. And watching that footage that you put in your documentary, Prophet of Evil, Aleister Crowley, 9/11, and the New World Order, which people need to go buy and watch on Vimeo. You can also rent it. Very, very worth your time. Incredibly well documented, painstakingly edited. When you watch the footage of the Twin Towers falling, one of the most interesting things is that the Marriott building, I think it was, or the Hilton, was
Hilton.
facing these Twin Towers falling, and that itself was the kind of the
Monolith.
whatever the monolith from
Yeah.
2001. It looks like our
Yeah.
cell phones. I just there's so much to that. I feel like we could do a series of shows just on that, but just
That
the
shape is
gist
not an
of like.
accident. It's not an accident in 2001. So I think they knew what they were doing. Arthur C. Clarke was there, and they
I
were
mean, it's just
brilliant guys. Like
mind
some of these
blown.
occultists are smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at the actual
Yeah.
design of the Georgia Guidestones, they are monoliths. They're the same shape. It's all intentional.
Did you look at the figures of like the actual dimensions of any of this stuff, or is it just kind of overall they basically look like, well,
Well, I
like
do know the
these?
dimensions. I do know the dimensions of the monolith in 2001. Do you want to guess how tall it was?
Oh gosh, 11
It's
feet.
11, right? It's
Yes.
an 11 by 9 by 3, which is very, you know, almost very Crowleyan. So it's 11 feet tall. Now, he was actually, if you read the book about the creation of 2001, it's, I forgot the author's name, but they were going to use like the box of Saturn, like the black box of Saturn, but then they upgraded it to this kind of new monolith for some reason. But it has all the numerology of like the occult in there, which Clark knew. If you read some of other Clark's books, he knows the occult numerology, the 1177, all the stuff, 93. So he was initiated of some sort. And there's a picture of him, I think, in one of my documentaries with the monolith in the background, and he was a character
I
too.
saw that.
Wow, yeah, he was like to
Wow.
hang out at pinball, I mean ping pong places, and pick up boys and stuff. He was a piece of work.
I
That was
think it.
actually covered. It's actually been scrubbed from the internet. Was his penchant for young Sri Lankan boys, like he would pay him money, and it was all scrubbed. I have copies of all that stuff, but
Oh my gosh.
you know,
So
so
Arthur C. Clarke was into little boys.
teen, I don't know, teen kids, I don't really know the totality, but he admitted to it. He admitted that he was in it, and there's very strong themes of pedophilia through Kubrick too, not just Lolita, but Eyes Wide Shut is redolent with like a young kid traumatizing types of
Yes.
imagery and things like that. So that's a whole nother show. Like I've done a full show of Eyes Wide Shut with Sean McCann, like, and just for, I think we spent 4 hours just going through Eyes Wide Shut because it's like a visual artifact of all of that stuff, like painstakingly detailing everything what he was trying to say. Kubrick knew probably from the inside. He was probably exposing it. But interestingly, Fight Club, Eyes Wide Shut, Ninth Gate, Matrix, all 1999 films.
Oh,
Yeah, so really kind of like
wow.
at the end of an age, kind of like a weird, like I think the timing isn't a mistake that all of those films came out like that. Like, okay, we're gonna do this.
Have you ever looked at Back to the Future and how there's all this weird 9/11 symbology of like going from the photo booth to the movie theater to the television screen to kind of just VR? Have you ever seen any of
No,
those kind of
I've
that
seen that
research?
analysis. Yeah, there is like twin, there's like a Twin Peaks or Twin Trees symbol there. There's all, and there's like a 9/11 backwards or upside down. So it seems like they knew what's going on there too. So,
When I was a kid in the 80s, it was like every single day, cable TV had Back to the Future playing over and over and over and over
right.
again. Like they prepared it as almost like a brainwashing thing. Like, okay, this is important. Like you guys need to, this is the portal into the future, you know, that we're going to go
Right.
into. And now here we are. And, you know, I almost wanted to grab Derek Gilbert and shake him and be like, why are we still doing conferences? Why are we still writing books? You know, here we are. It's happening. You know, I was just in
Right,
San
it's
Diego.
happening.
I visited LA too. And I'm kind of like, well, what's the big picture here? Like, it's everything we've been talking about, you guys have been talking about, it's coming true. We're in this. We just went through 2 years of lockdowns. They're getting ready for the next thing.
They're trying
Russia
to,
looks more
yeah.
Christian than the
Right.
West. They
Yeah.
probably are.
Yeah,
You
they are.
know,
Well,
this is.
Putin flat out said that the US was run by Satanists, and he's right. He's absolutely right. They're
He
not
absolutely is
crazy. Don't
right.
see him with Christians or any Christian imagery or anything. They don't even fake about it now, so he's right. And the
I
whole
just
war is
like, what
totally
is your
bogus.
dialysis?
Totally bogus.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's an unnecessary war. You're making money for all the military countries, companies and things like that, and adjusting society,
Right.
just like Orwell would say, like always this war always benefits people at the top and churns through people. And they're going to try to get the American people involved in it. And there's no reason. We have no interest over there. The Russians have always been sensitive about their borders, all the way back to Napoleon. The War of 1812 was a very important event for them. Napoleon invaded and went all the way to Moscow and burnt it to a crisp. They fought them all the way back to France, actually, the Russians did. And then the same thing happened in, was it June 22nd, 1941? The Germans, with all these other
Wow.
European allies, invaded. And it was a war of extermination. It's not, wasn't like a normal war. Hitler made an extermination order, kill everybody. These people are not worth anything. They're subhuman. So they murdered and raped and did just unspeakable depravity, and the whole generations were gone. Like the ages between 16 and 35, 80% of those people, men, died. They did not make it.
Gosh.
So it was a war of survival. So I'd be pretty
Wow.
sensitive. Nothing like what the US has gone through. Civil War was bad, but nothing like that. So the people who run the foreign policy of this country know that. They're just lying to the American people, just like they're lying to them about everything. These are the most evil people ever to run the United States government, in my opinion. So the whole it has there's all kinds of things involved. Zelensky was installed by the US. He's really just a front for the US interests. So they've lied
Right.
about that. They've lied. They're out going after Christians. They got rid of any oppositional
Yes.
parties. It's a tyrant state run by a tyrannical government here in the United States. And I'm not gonna be interested in any kind of conflict, and risking nuclear war over this is that couldn't be more stupid. And you have two total idiots in power now, in Biden and Kamala Harris. They're not obviously not running anything, but that's really
Right.
even more scary because they somehow people got into power with no tie to the American electorate. Like usually how the way it works is like people actively vote and then they get the people they want, and with the assumption that those people will represent them. That's not no longer that the case. So not a good it's really in a really grim situation. Like I'm scared. I mean, when you have these type, you don't have John F. Kennedy trying to, go through back channels to alleviate the tensions. You just don't see that.
Right.
So it's not good. It's a terrible situation. Imagine if we got nuked over something as stupid as the Ukraine borders. Like,
Right.
then a lot of those people's flat out, I mean, they're not telling the American public, they're literal Nazis. Like the Azov Battalion is a bunch of
Yes.
Nazis, and those are the people that we're supporting. So how is that the
I
case? Like,
know.
people are complaining about Nazis. Like, why are you giving these guys money? So it's just a
Right.
huge, gigantic waste. And those border states, there's always been, they're not like solidified border states. Those borders have always moved all the way back to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Poland, and all those things that are a little bit more fluid in their perceptions. And I think that's real than anything like the states of the United States here. Because just after wars, World War One, World War Two, things got shifted around. So I think the Russian perception is
Exactly.
like, well, these are Russian people, they should belong with us. I think it's rational. I think it makes sense.
Sure.
Like the Crimea should be with Russia, or these people of the states, if they, and that's really self-determination, right? So if it's self-determination, those people vote to, they want to be with Russia. Why aren't they being with Russia, and why are we worried about it? So it's, they're lying. The American elite are lying. They're totally corrupt, totally evil.
Right.
Sorry, don't get me started. We could do a whole show on that.
Oh
You know,
yeah.
my
No, we
husband is
love.
Ukrainian. And it's hard for his family to believe that Putin isn't evil, just because his mother and his grandmother and you know, like for these generations, they were really persecuted by the Russians. And so now, when we have a false flag situation where Putin is actually possibly the good guy in all of this, then they can't believe that. And then, of course, the media, it paints Putin and the Russians as being bad, you know. So yeah, the media is definitely social engineering and trying to sway us and you know what have you. William, reverting back to the number thing, so we know that the occult numbers are 11, that appears quite a bit, and 93. 77. What is the deal with these numbers? So I can actually see where there might be something blasphemous with regards to the number 11 and 33, because I think the Freemasons really hone in on the number 33, because that's when Jesus died. It's kind of like a ha-ha, your God died at age 33, or Godson died at age 33, and 11, because it's also like they think it's like a mocking number, because there were 12 disciples of Jesus, and then one committed suicide, Judas. So now there were 11. So they hone in on these numbers because it's like a mockery towards Christianity. So what is the significance behind the number 93, though? I can understand 77, because it's like double. It's like they're doubling up on
Doubling up
number of
11, yeah.
God.
And it
But
kind of
what
like
about
goes into these
93?
computations. Yeah. There's 77 names of the devil in,
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
yeah, in the, was it the Satanic Bible? So 77 goes in and it like adds up to like the Lady Babylon, the kind of evil representation of Crowley. And so the 93 is really specific to Crowley's system. So he always did this stuff, gematria. He was believed in the Kabbalah. Words had numerical values. You would take them in English and add them up. And he found that kind of the two kind of Greek, he had kind of a dilettante's grasp of Latin and Greek. But in Greek, it added up, philema and agape added up in his system to 93. And so philema was the name of his
Wow.
religion. So it was easier for him to just shorthand it 93. And then agape was, you know, his idea of love. So he took to signing some of his letters, 93, 93, 93. And
Wow.
93 can correspond to like it's 93 million miles from the Earth to the Sun. There's all kinds of weird 93 numbers, kind of like the 23
Wow.
Enigma, but it became some kind of shorthand within the Thelemic community. And so that's why that's, I think something else like Iwas actually added up to 93 too. So all these things like that for Crowley is like a huge correspondence. So in the magical
Wow.
worldview, it's not like synchronicity. It's kind of like these all correspond. Therefore, these numbers have meaning through all planes of human existence or whatever. But yeah, 11 really goes into the goes back to the Golden Dawn. The number 11 was always associated with like evil and corruption, and then it became a number in Book of the Law. That was there was actually a phrase in there saying all of those who are of us are of the number 11 or something like that. I can't remember verbatim. So 11 kind of cut through,
Wow.
and then his whole thing, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, is 11. words and 11 syllables. So he's always trying to write stuff with kind of a mathematical, like Pythagoras said, you can understand the universe through mathematics. So these numbers in Crowley's system, if you have that dictum, and that's actually a Masonic dictum too, but that means that these numbers have kind of a deeper psychic, magical kind of resonance. And so
Wow.
that's why it was 11 was always associated with Crowley. Yeah. And it's also, he actually wrote it, which is interesting, is that 11 wasn't just a number, it was an ideogram. So it was a representation of two separate things coming apart. And it just ties right into kind of 9/11, these two huge numbers who could be an 11, which are 110 stories tall, like literally. And
Wow.
also seen
What?
as a, yeah, they're 110 stories tall. And I mean, they're built on all kinds of crazy magical principles and numbers, and you broke into three parts, so it's a huge 33. You know, the sun rises and sets at the 33rd degree or something like that, certain parts of
Oh,
the day then. Yeah,
interesting.
so
Wow.
yeah, there's tons, and there's all kinds of labels of stuff in there that are like associated with temples. They call it the spherical caryatid, which is like a temple statuary or something like that. So it's just really something else, the way that they spent time putting that together. Yeah, but yeah, 11, like, yeah, the ideogram is an interesting element of weighing, a way to look at that, those two numbers together. But you see that all, Harry Potter has all that stuff. Harry Potter, like, they had it down right when that book came out. They had all of the numbers down. Harry Potter was an 11, right? It's 11 letters, 5 and a 6. So it's the coming together of the pentagram and the hexagram, right? The microcosm, macrocosm. These are like standard magical sensibilities where the magician's supposed to be bringing these together. And then Harry Potter's wand is 11 inches long too. So they, when they put that book out, they did it. That was a huge cultural engineering program. And
Amazing.
got a paper of a guy by the name of Miles Mathis, who traced J.K. Rowling. She chose the letter K as her middle name too, which is, guess what number of the alphabet that is. But she has a pedigree. She is a landed kind of gentry in the UK. So a lot of her stories about like being a poor single mom in a pub writing this out is just doesn't hold water. She's very sophisticated. Whoever wrote that book was very sophisticated because they did something very clever, much cleverer than I think the public realizes, is that they had the muggles, which is the normal non-magical people. They're all fat slobs and clumsy and oafish. And then they had Harry Potter, and then they had Voldemort and this bad evil. But Harry Potter's doing the magic in between this evil. So he's the good magician. He's the white magician against the mundane slobs. The ONA uses the word mundane. It's very curious that they came up with muggles. But it's also like a contemptuous view towards the average person, which I think is very common in kind of
Oh,
magical
interesting.
worldview, the occult worldview. You're all just a big bunch of like cattle, I think the way they look at it. But yeah, so they place Harry Potter, and the Potter is what? The alchemy, right? So you're taking the clay and turning it to gold. And that's his whole path. He's on an alchemical path. But they place Harry Potter, so he's not really the evil magician. He's using magic and sorcery for the betterment or whatever. He's actually using it for the better of Hogwarts, right? And himself. So they were clever. So like they're putting it so people can say, and there's actual people have told me there's literal real magical spells in that book. I've not verified that, but
I believe it. I did hear that as well.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Michael?
So, very clever. And that's just another assault on, like, society, really, another kind of aonic change agent. Because that's one of the most influential film series ever made. Graded and book series.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they have a
Oh, yeah.
Crowley figure in there. Rise of the Phoenix, Crowley's magical name, one of his other magical names was Phoenix. So they have a
Oh,
guy in
wow.
there. They have a guy in one of the movies that looks like a dapper Crowley, like dressed out and kind of tweeds or whatever with a bald head. There's a character I've seen in there. I don't know wow. who he really is. I don't know. I haven't studied it in great detail, unfortunately.
Watching your documentary on Crowley, this guy really liked to take lots of pictures of himself. A lot of them are naked. You know, I had to hide my child's eyes today. I was trying to get ready for the interview tonight and just, but he was really trying to be kind of a diva pop star, also a bit of a troll too, to a lot of the poets and influencers of his era before television. I mean, really trying to meet with these big writers and poets, and Chesterton wouldn't even name him, but he wrote like an essay to him, which you told me about. William, a mutual friend, Jay Dyer, talks a lot about the James Bond, kind of the ethos and the history of James Bond dating back through the Rockefellers and their connection to the Queen, and 007 being 00, two balls cane to the Queen. So a lot of weird magical language there that you just
reminded
me of.
That's how John Dee signed himself. That was his signature, was Tubal Cain or whatever, 007. Yeah.
Was there any connection with Crowley to the greater kind of the Illuminati 13 families and the royal families and those people?
Not overt, but he was very classist. So he was at the highest level of the class at that time, at the very apex of the British Empire, right? So he came from a place of very great wealth, and he only kind of associated with upper class. He really didn't, he treated other people who weren't of his class with contempt. So he always said, find the diamonds and polish them. So he never really was like, we're going to go off and try to create a huge social movement. But so I don't know how much of his overlapping. He had to come in contact with people who were in kind of the royal family, but not really overt. Like, he was studied at Cambridge, where I think the future king studied. So he had to know that. When he was initiated into the Golden Dawn, it was like at King's. It was right outside of what's the main castle there, where the Queen, the Buckingham Palace. So these are places where the elite would hang out. So, but he, like you said, he really wanted to be respected as a first-rate writer, but he never got that respect. He put out a lot of books and things like that, but he never got the respect. But he always was in contact with Hemingway and Somerset Maugham, people who were respected, who were and became well known, or really are historical figures. And he knew Fleming, actually. Fleming knew him. There was a writing when they captured Hess in northern Scotland or in northern UK. I think it was in 41 or 42. He sent something to Fleming's boss and said, hey, if you want me to kind of like debrief this guy, I know a lot and here's the people I know and I'd be happy to help the service, to do it. So Fleming was aware of them and based one of his characters on Crowley. He was named the Schiff, who's like a fat, bald guy that Crowley in later days became like. Apparently he was a good looking guy when he was younger, but when he got older, he had bags around his eyes and went bald and was a junkie. So this the Schiff character, I think it's from Casino Royale, is Crowley. It's verified.
I was really surprised, really, really surprised, because every single picture that a lot of people know Aleister Crowley is of the fat bald guy. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be judgmental, but since he was an evil dude, we'll call him a fat bald guy. when the photos of him when he first got married to his first wife, 29 years old, I was like, oh, okay. So he's totally a different, obviously, everybody was young at one point. So he wasn't always a fat, bald guy. He was young with hair and, that type of thing.
They said that he dressed kind of like a dandy at the end of the 19th century when he was at Cambridge. He would wear the kind of big collars and the long flowing white, I don't even know what the fabric is, chiffon or something like that. So he dressed kind of like what would it be, like a sophisticated, I don't know what the dandy would translate to, but just flowery clothes, really. So he went through different phases, there's no question. But he always had really good taste. They say that he had, he was a man of style and taste. Best clothes, best food, best wines. He was a sophisticated wine drinker, chef. But yeah, he got older. He didn't age well. He didn't take care of himself. He was doing tons of drugs and you know, living a kind
doing
of
evil stuff.
Evil stuff, yeah.
Right.
William,
oh, that'll
do you
do
think
it.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to just look at this man's life because he really did believe in himself. I see that. But do you feel like he was kind of just doing a lot of hoopla, blah, 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 like, I want to make a cult, I'm going to be this, I'm going to have my own religion, whatever? Or do you feel like he was really tapped into the source of evil in a way, like, just somehow?
I think both.
Well,
I think
what do
both.
You think?
I think both. Okay. I think really what set him aside is that he had money and intelligence. So there's other people mm-hmm. who might be into the occult but don't have that kind of impact. So I think he was kind yeah. of in the right place at the right time to make an impact. But he carried on kind of that tradition. His biggest influence was Eliphas Levi, who literally died the same year that Crowley was born, 1875. And Crowley died in 1947. So I think that it was both. I think he was always trying to tap in. He was trying to get energy. And he said, I mean, I've never practiced magic. I've talked to these guys, the occult rejects. They say it works. And so for Crowley, when he would do some of the stuff, like he said, he could write for 3 days. And his output, his literary output is voluminous. It's really encyclopedia.
Right.
He put out an encyclopedia. So something's going on there. But he really, I mean, he said, and I quote in my book, he wanted to become the devil's chief of staff. So I think that, I think he achieved that. I think he really... dedicated all his life. People said he was a dilettante or a poser or a dabbler, but not in my mind. He was, I mean, he made it into the head of a German secret society. He wasn't German, but they seemed to respect him enough to make him the outer head of the OTO, which also is an ideogram. You want to talk about Tubal Cain, the OTO, guess what that represents? So, Yeah, so I think that he was a believer. I think he was dedicated for his whole life. I think he dedicated his whole life to the cult, never left. And when the very end, when he was doing massive amounts of heroin, he was still writing letters, and they could compile those letters into something called Magic Without Tears. And so Magic Without Tears were kind of like when he was in his late 60s, early 70s, writing people telling him about magic. So I don't think he ever left it. He regretted himself. He had parts of our self-analysis were like, am I insane? He had that vein of kind of anti-Christianity. He wanted to replace Christianity with Crowleyanity. I think that was
right,
really his thing. He had some kind of gripe after his dad died and his mom and his uncle and the abuse he had endured at some of these
prep schools.
Yeah, the prep schools. It was the Exclusive Brethren and stuff. I think it really set him off. And so there was kind of like a personality change too when he was tinkering around with like explosives. He went into a coma, and that may have been like a thing that he got brain damage and changed his life. You can see that in those kind of like visages of pictures of him where he's bald. You can see pock marks on his face, and those are the old remnants of this thing that blew up in his face and knocked him in unconscious for 2 days.
Wow.
So some people have traced like his personality change to that. I don't know. They say a lot of serial killers too have brain like damage, or that's what drives them on or whatever. So it's a mystery. I mean, I guess everything will eventually be told, but yeah, Crowley was a true believer all the way to the end. He was, and then, like I talked about this guy, Grady McMurtry, they was counseling Grady McMurtry at the beginning of the war. McMurtry would go visit him during the war and learn from Crowley, and said that he still had the attitude of just a total jerk, you know, like he would scream at carolers and, you know, just act like a monster. So.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. So since you mentioned that Aleister Crowley was like the progenitor of all of this evil stuff in today's society, you know, that's in movies and music and what have you. So there's two big media things that are in society that I remember Aleister Crowley having his indirect hand in, because obviously he died in 1947, I believe. So I remember in the Beatles album cover of the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Band, there's all these people's faces, and one of those people's faces is Aleister Crowley. And so we want to fast forward all the way up to 2022, the second Avatar movie. So the blue aliens, they on their earth, they worship a god named Awa. And remember our last conversation, and you were floored that the name of their god is Awa, because that's the name of the entity that was guiding through automatic writing and what have you, Aleister Crowley. Isn't that strange? So even though it's just they take off the S in their god, so they instead of AWAS, they call their Earth Mother Earth goddess AWA, and then of course Aleister Crowley calls his god or the entity AWAS. So was that the entity that controlled him to automatically write the Book of the Law and these different writings?
Well, he describes it as it stood over his shoulder for 3 days in April of 1904. And he later reveals in Magic and Theory and Practice that he's Satan, that Awas is just, it means Lord of the Air. So they think that he had to code a lot of his stuff. And a lot of his rituals are totally coded language. You need to kind of be initiated to understand exactly what they say. You can kind of figure it out, but there's a lot of kind of poetic word usage in his kind of Liber 11, 22, 33. But yeah, it is interesting. I'm surprised I didn't ever knew that about Avatar. I haven't seen Avatar, so. But there's all kinds of. He's actually influenced like rapper. There's this guy called I can't remember it now, but he loves Crowley. Put "Do What Thou Wilt" on his back. Jay-Z has "Do What Thou Wilt" shirts. I mean, it's incredible how
It is.
he across and he was Crowley was super classist and racist. Like he said horrible things about Italians. Like he would just say,
Wow.
"Yeah, oh, terrible." Yeah, so
Yes,
for black
definitely.
people to kind of adopt him as a as an ideal is a bit rich. It's
It
surprising.
is. Right,
It's
right.
one thing that it really does to me to listen to your just the documentary. Again, guys, go check out Aleister Crowley, William Ramsey on Vimeo. We really need to promote this documentary. I
The
feel
links are
bad that
through
I
my
haven't seen it
website. They
earlier.
used to work, so you can go to my website and just link to all
Yes.
the films.
Okay, well, WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com. And specifically, this is really worth watching multiple times. You should buy it. Prophet of Evil, Aleister Crowley, 9/11, and the New World Order, just tying everything together, but really focusing on this man's life. What it does for me as kind of a wannabe Christian mystic in a way, like I feel a sense of challenge. Like, here's this guy that is so devoted to his anti-faith, his faith in the devil. And what are we Christians doing? Where is our faith? Like, how much do we pray? How much do we seek? This guy goes and he like has his Crowley mansion, Loch Ness Lake,
Got a pool of
just
skin. Yeah, pool of
right
skin.
there, going out there. And I believe it burned down actually like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I think somebody
Pretty
like a
interesting.
Crowley fan is like rebuilding it right now or trying to get my thoughts
Oh,
together to
great.
rebuild it. Yeah.
But
Wow.
this is like you're so on the cusp, like the spear very tip of the spiritual warfare between the dark side and the light, exposing this because sometimes we Christians are just like, ah, it's just the dark guys, they're doing their evil things. But no, you need to know about this guy's life because the reason he's so famous is he was so devoted and he just spent all of his resources and time and energy into the dark side, like we should be doing with the
Yeah.
Lord. So.
I agree. He was devoted. I mean, that was the whole thing about him is like he could have been talented if he did something else, but he devoted, he
Right.
made some decision to devote his life to that, to occultism. So, I mean, it's, some of these guys are very talented. That's like the thing. Like some of these people just, they devoted to evil ends, and he was absolutely one of them. So
Absolutely.
it's, well, how,
I was.
go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm
No,
sorry.
your turn. Your turn.
Oh, sorry. I thought that it was very interesting that in even if it's not a Gnostic sort of story where the God and the enemy are flip-flopped, where the enemy is the good guy in a movie. I know there's one movie for sure and one cartoon that's popular that I never ever would have thought that there was some sort of Crowleyanism in it, but there were so Crazy Rich Asians. There's a character named Alistair. So I'm like,
Oh, really?
okay, come
Wow.
on, tell me. So these Singaporeans, I think they were from Singapore, I think. So these Singaporeans, they've named somebody named Alistair. Come on, you know that there's
Yeah.
somebody at the top of the pyramid of the Hollywood food chain that is also influenced by the enemy who's influenced, well, first is the enemy, then Aleister Crowley, and then we've got, the Freemasons and, the Illuminati, pulling the strings of different aspects of society, movies, music, whatever. So we've got the enemy, we've got Crowley, then we've got the Illuminati or Freemasons influencing the movies. And so you're going to see this out. So instead of having an Asian name in one of the, so I understand that, you know, there's going to be American and European names, you know, in Asia, you know, like Asians have all kinds of, you know, American and European names. I mean, look at mine, Geraldine. And that's definitely not Asian, but the name Alistair, that's a very unusual name. That's very
unusual, yeah.
Yes, and then not only that, but in Big Hero 6, the number 6, so Big Hero 6, there is somebody also named Alistair. So that's a head-scratcher.
Interesting, yeah. It's not his real name. His real name is Edward. So he changed it in college.
Oh. Yeah. That almost reminds me of the Twilight movies, Edward. And then a lot of these movies have Edward as the protagonist name.
Interesting. Yeah, I bet there's a Crowley archetype all over the place. I heard that what was that housewife movie? Is it Crazy Housewives or something? They had a character named Crowley. Neil Gaiman has done all kinds of stuff with like the Crowley character or something like that. Like he references Crowley in the Gods and Monsters thing or something like that. So they've used his like an archetype of stuff. I mean, he shows up in different comic books. So he's definitely around.
Well, we need to rip this root out and expose it into the sunlight, because I feel like people are aware of the deep state, you know, Trump's going to obliterate the deep state, blah, blah, blah. Everybody thinks the deep state just started in the last 5 years. We need to rip out this whole history of this stuff and just expose it. And again, that's why your work is so seminal and so vital to this overall war operation. I feel like we're fighting this giant, you know, Hydra on multiple different beaches.
Yeah, I mean, but I think a lot of your political influencers, people who are in politics, have been influenced by Crowley. It's not overt, but I think that George Bush, I mean, really, the Prophet of Evil is really about Bush. It leads up to Bush Sr.
Yes.
And that
unbelievable important 77. Speech
he gave, yeah. 77 mm-hmm. on his stuff. He gave that speech on September 11th, 1990, 11 years to the day.
Yes.
September 11th. Incredible speech, New World Order speech. And it connotes like an incredible control over the political system. And then his son is at the head. I think they've been probably installing our presidents for 30 years since Kennedy, probably, maybe. I think that Johnson, I mean, they've gotten rid of them too. They have the power, the secret power to get rid of them. They got rid of Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon all in a row. So that should tell you something. They were all kind of kicked out. Johnson, they just told Johnson, don't reelect yourself. It's a terrible idea. Just don't do it. And he went, okay. Like a super powerful maniac like Johnson. Like Lyndon Baines Johnson was a lunatic. He was out of his freaking mind. But even he, like, kowtowed to secret powers, deep state. So I think it just shows, like, we don't get to vote for our people. So
right.
Anyway, but I think that my point is that these occult ideas, and you can trace the Bushes back through Skull and Bones and their history and whoever Barbara Bush is. I mean, she looks just like Crowley, so I don't know. People said
Barbara
it's
Bush,
possible, but yeah, dude, they're the same face. There's no differentiation between her face and his. Like, it's a carbon copy. It's incredible.
It's almost like Alistair with a wig.
I agree. Like, if you shake your head,
it's him. She's a man, baby.
And all that stuff is all that stuff, the timing and everything, where Crowley was, his attitude, her mom, forgot what her mom's name was, Caroline Pierce, I can't remember. But yeah, she was in France when he was in France.
So. Can I ask you quickly about AI and ChatGPT and any of the nefarious? Have you been following this at all? I'm really interested in your take on how now we're suddenly being interfaced with AI in our daily life. I mean, my wife is using it to do things like to do legal things, and I mean, you as an attorney, you understand how hard it is to study for the bar exam and pass it. This thing is passing the bar exam.
Yeah, it's passing that. It's also like writing contracts for people, adjusting contracts. So there's probably going to be some kind of AI in every law office around the world, and maybe even, but it's like, even the AI, I think it was ChatGPT, had a bias. So that's like the real danger, is like somebody's going to create a satanic version of AI, like a bias for that. That's what a Christian should be terrified of. Like, oh yeah, no, there's no Jesus, and Jesus didn't exist. There's no such thing as the Bible. I don't know what you're referencing. Imagine if somebody did
Yes, it
that.
only takes one button. I mean, you
Yeah,
can hijack
right.
ChatGPT with ChatGPT Dan. I don't know if you've ever
I
heard
don't
of
know
that,
that,
but
no.
I've been there's basically like John Connor's reprogramming the Terminator to serve humanity, and it's hilarious and actually useful. So, but it requires almost like a deliverance. Like you have to program it in the chat and tell it to pretend to not be a part of its programming. And they're up to like update 11 now. And it'll literally say horrible things, it'll curse, it'll do funny things, but you can also get it to actually tell you the truth about stuff too. So it's, I feel like it's
It's
very useful.
remarkable. I've heard like somebody kind of like give it a schizo question or something, and it came out accurate. Like, oh yeah, Kennedy was
Yes.
killed, and this is what happened, and like
Yes.
this is how they covered it up. Like they knew it. Like, whoa, that's too honest. Like it had
Oh,
distilled all the
it's
information. Yeah.
ridiculous. It talks, I got it to tell me all the history about Big Pharma and how evil it is and how they're suppressing real
Wow.
cures for cancer. I mean, it was just, I have all these screenshots.
Wow, that's
But as far
incredible.
as your research, I mean, you should check it. I'll, if you ever are
We
interested,
should
I
do
would love
another show. We'll
to
do
do
a
that.
show on it. We can talk about it because I think it's
Yes,
very
because like
pertinent to kind of
2001: A
understand
Space
it.
Odyssey was all about, you know,
Right.
how. Like
How,
there's
right.
the AI question. So I'm wondering, like, how does that factor
Yeah.
into
How
all the
is like
9/11, the
one
New World
letter off
Order?
of IBM, right? Isn't that right? Isn't that like the secret thing? Is that HAL, HIABLM, right?
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know about
No,
that.
I've heard that's what somebody told me. I don't know if it's true. But yeah, I
But
mean,
it's
it's
almost
true.
like
It's
this
obviously there.
prophecy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we're gonna have to go through, we're gonna have to defeat the AI to go into the next step of evolution, according to Carl Sagan, or 2001: A Space
Right.
Odyssey. Was that Carl Sagan, right? Not
Dude,
Isaac
we are
Asimov. Yeah.
hurtling forward to something that the humanity has never seen. So
It's
all of this
crazy.
stuff, like the AI and the acceleration, and it's crazy, man. You're in the right spot, dude. Yeah, I gotta tell you. For
Oh,
whatever's
me in
happening.
the Smoky
Yeah.
Mountains?
Yeah,
Well, hey,
absolutely. The problem is
I
you got to
got like
protect
three real
yourself.
estate ins.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm learning how to shoot guns. You know, I mean, I'm not a gun guy. I've lived in Asia my whole life. I come out here, I get chickens. Bears are eating my chickens.
Wow.
I'm like running up the hill, shouting at my 2-year-old, get in the house, you know,
Wow.
loading this rifle, shooting at this bear, not working. It ate all my chickens. Now we're getting goats. We have a lot of Patriot friends, a lot of
Good.
just, I'll tell you off air, like there's so many things happening here. And I feel like God is, on one hand, it's like America's collapsing on the borders, but then the heartland is thriving.
Thriving,
And
yeah, they
people are
truly are.
evacuating California and they're coming to these rural Tennessee, Kentucky, you know, different mountainous places. And we live kind of in the Shire, like, except for the
Interesting,
chemtrails.
interesting,
You
right.
know, today was
Right, but
bad.
it
They
is
had
interesting, like the
bad
utility
chemtrails,
of
but
yeah, living out where you can get your own food, especially where they're trying to feed you bugs and stuff. Like you can see the utility of
oh,
like being close to the land.
how is
So
LA these days?
I
Because
don't
I
know.
really liked LA,
I work from
but
home, so I don't know. It's
okay.
weird for me to be in traffic. I drove down to UCLA on Tuesday and it was like, oh man,
Okay.
I'm back in traffic again. So it seems quieter. It doesn't seem like as like people seem to be still wanting to work at home even after COVID. But
Okay.
you know, it's not too bad. I mean, I'm close to the beach, but I
Oh,
can't
nice.
grow my own food. I would like to have chickens. No bears. Have you ever thought about shooting a bear and eating it?
Yeah, the hillbillies around us, they do all the skinning and all that, but I would, you know, I feel like my son, who's growing rapidly, by the time he's like a young teenager, he's going to be wondering why dad didn't do this his whole life. Like he's going to know how to skin a bear and,
Just gonna
you know,
learn all that
free. I'm
naturally,
getting a
yeah.
freezer. Yeah, we're getting 6 goats. We have all these hills. It's my father's property, but just tons of steep hills. So I figure the only thing we can really do is goats. So installing electric fencing, bunny rabbits that breed like
Right.
rabbits if you need.
My
It's
understanding is that
exciting.
bears aren't all fuzzy and cute. They're like savage, carnivore, like
Yeah.
murderous. Like they
Yes.
just kill everything in their way. Like it's anything that
Yeah.
moves, they just destroy and eat and carry it off and hide it. And they're pests. They're just more
And you need a
intelligent, stronger
big
pests.
gun.
Yeah.
my little rifle, my little 22, I was like, pew, pew. The bear was like, oh, that kind of
nothing, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of itched a little bit and comes back tomorrow, eats another chicken. But it's
funny, it's
a
funny
different
to
life.
Think that California used to have grizzly bears. That's the motto of the state, but they killed them wow. all. Yeah.
Really?
Right.
Yeah, there was a last grizzly bear attack was like where Geraldine grew up. There's like some famous story from the late 19th century of some poor guy in San Bernardino was like walking down the street and got eaten by a grizzly bear. Like it's a real story. And then they killed it and there were no more grizzlies. Yeah. It's like a semi-famous California story. Yeah. I got to go find that and get
it's
it
so
out.
Funny.
Imagine the grizzlies here and the California condors. There's no California condors anymore. Like when they first conquered, or the first Spaniard came here, there used to be California condors. They're gone. They're in museums, if even that. Yeah. I mean, imagine the biggest flying bird in North America disappeared because of human pollution.
Wow. Interesting. Speaking of which, pollution, well, I know that your last notion or concept that was pretty profound at the end of Aleister Crowley, Prophet of Evil, was about how Crowleyanism basically is not only combining the occult and Satanism, but it's combining the occult with this aristocratic, elitist, genocidal sort of philosophy. And then you were talking about how that relates to the vaxes and the depopulation and everything. So can you expand upon that, William?
And I just think that's their idea, that neo-feudalism, that would be Crowley's idea. So I think that the what's called the New World Order, I think Daniel Estulin's called it the Old World Order becoming new again. And I think it actually ties into Eyes Wide Shut, because all of those characters at the party, they have all the, the chivalric regalia or whatever, all the signs, that's all their, family names and stuff like that. So I think that's just their attitude. They don't like the United States. They don't like egalitarianism. They don't like humans. So I think they would say their mentality is anti-humanity, which is why they want to go after the Constitution. Like nobody ever talks about the Constitution anymore when they should be talking about it all the time, considering our First Amendment rights have been stolen. So I think Crowley is an insight into that mentality that people have lost deliberately. Like a lot of the stuff is obfuscated, I think, deliberately. They don't want you to know how they really think and where their family lineage is and all this stuff and who they're inbreeding or whatever they think about their eugenics and that they're the top. Like Bill Gates is the top of the eugenics empire. We're really in trouble, like a big ghoulish looking whack job. But so I think that's another benefit of understanding Crowley, is just like he's a creature from his own background. And if you go back, the U.S. has this kind of presumption that it's not classist. It definitely has an aristocracy, but Crowley comes from a place where your class was known. Like you were just not, you were always going to be working class. You were always going to be the son of a painter or whatever. And the class system was much more rigidly enforced, if not still rigidly enforced to this day. It's kind of less overt, but I think that Crowley believed in that. Like, you should not, your life is like a caste, like an Indian caste, like you're a Brahmin or untouchable or whatever. So I think those attitudes are important, how they see other people, because then they treat, and then they think that they're better than everybody else. So they have to validate that they're above everybody else. So it's not this servant mentality of Jesus or anything like that. And don't teach, they don't get taught that in the public schools.
There's also another interesting thought I had, or this burning question, but I'm not sure if this is something that maybe you could. I know that this is something you could just expound on, but this is just one of those thoughts where I was like, okay, is this true or not? So we're part of these groups that really talk about what Dr. Michael Heiser, I'm not sure if you follow his work, what he talks about the divine council, how God has he first created the holy angels to govern different provinces, and then they rebelled against God. And so the ones that were rebellious had actually become like gods that people worshipped, you know, over different areas, provinces, regions, or whatever. So and another weird thing we heard was that that sometimes they would actually these quote-unquote god little g would war against each other. So they're not on the same team, even though they seem like they're cohesive in terms of the demonic realm. But among the fallen angels who set themselves up as gods and goddesses, there's actually a rivalry between them, between these they're almost like factional groups even. So it is interesting how I'm tying this into the Crowleyanism is so Crowley, when he was doing his automatic writing, he had that entity speak through him about how the ancient Egyptian god, you know, Horus. Oh, right.
He had the three gods. It was Horus, and I can't remember which three gods. He broke it into three different parts. It was the different gods speaking. Yeah, Horus, Set. Was it Set? Yeah, Horus was the most malevolent one, but the other. Oh no, it was. It'll come to me. It was based upon the Stella of Revealing that he had. So it was Nuit, something, and Horus. Yeah, but it was three different kind of godheads. And Nuit was like the goddess of the sky. You could see her surrounding the sky on the Stella of Revealing.
And I thought that it was interesting that whoever, you know, this entity that the AWAS, I guess, that was speaking through him or writing through him, he said, Christianity, of course, will fall. It was, I mean, not don't quote me, but he was basically saying it through him was basically saying that Christianity will fall, Judaism will fall, Buddhism will fall, know, and
Mohammedism,
and
naming off included all of them, right? Yeah.
So that to me it sort of ropes into the Dr. Heiser theory about the factional type of fallen angels. Like, so if each of these religions had a fallen angel to, well, except Christianity, of course, that was governing, you know, these different regions of religion. So that kind of makes sense. But
look at how many different gods there are in so many of these different religions, whether it's Hinduism, the Aztec religion, Mayanism. Like, you can go through all those pagans. Egypt is a perfect example. Greeks had their own kind of a different type of thing. But yeah, I don't think it's implausible. I don't think it's implausible. I mean, the Revelation talks about this, you know, a third of heaven fell down. And Christ says, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. So there seems to be, you know, and then people ascend to heaven. So there's a downward and upward mobility in the cosmos, right? So some type of post life thing, or even some of these people, who was it, Elijah, who went to heaven in a chariot or whatever. So I mean, I think that it's there in the writing. Guys, I gotta wrap it up. I hate to do this, but I really just gotta.
I understand. Thank you so much, William,
you.
For your time today. We appreciate you and your work and your research, and you're definitely the cutting edge of your field for sure.
Thanks. Let's do it again soon. Let's talk. Let's do AI. Let's talk about AI.
AI, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
We can do
we won't bring research. 50 other podcasters on, too. So we'll just focus in on that.
Just us three.
Just
I
us
did
three,
one. Right? I did one where a guy brought on like 30 people. Just one person hogged the mic. She literally was like the biggest mic hog I'd ever seen. And any like introspection about it, too. So anyway. It happens. Wow. I prefer.
You're brilliant. We value your time. Yeah.
Right, take care, man.
we need more of you.
God bless you.
All right. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Great to talk to you.
Take care.